The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Yes, hello and welcome along to William Hill's Daily Racing Podcast. You are tuned in to Thursday's edition of the podcast where we'll be taking a look at the second day of action from the Ebor Festival. You'll hear it's all live here at William Hill's Racing Radio from 1:45pm. Gareth Topham, Sam Turner and Darren Owen in the studio to guide you through the action at York. Also racing from Bath, Foss Lass, Newton Abbott, Wolverhampton and an Irish meeting from Killarney. But for now, my name is Sam Norris and I'm joined once more on the podcast by Timeform's Jamie Lynch. Morning, Jamie.
Good morning, Sam.
How are you today?
I'm good. I'm happy. I'm excited. We're at the initial stages of the York Ebor Festival, the greatest week of the year for many Yorkshiremen. God's own sport in God's own country. So if you can't be elated and excited at this stage of the year, at this stage of the season, then when will you be? Say it as well, Sam. They sound like very, very safe hands as far as the afternoon show goes on William Hill Radio. Who have we got? Gareth Topham.
Gareth Topham, Sam Turner and Darren Owen.
Yeah, I know each of them to varying degrees and they are in very safe hands. So yeah, that sounds like a good steer for the afternoon with those three. But you know what? We're going to get in there first and steal some of their thunder by picking out the best bets on day two.
Yeah, hopefully. As you mentioned, it's a superb day of racing and we'll have a superb team in the studio. We can't reflect, unfortunately, on Wednesday's racing. This podcast recorded just before the start of the meeting. But no doubt we're going to have a good day as well on Thursday, which we'll take a look at.
Yeah, going to look at that. What have we got? We've got Tegruda, haven't we?
Yes.
She is obviously the headline act of the day. Not really a betting race, is it? Because Tegruda is long odds on, justifiably so. But it's just great to see a horse of her quality strutting her stuff on the Knavesmire. But what we have got, besides the Yorkshire Oaks, is plenty of hard action, plenty of tricky races, plenty of other intriguing races as well. It's Ladies' Day on the track. It's Ladies' Day in terms of the equine quality as well, because apart from the Yorkshire Oaks, we've got the Lowther Stakes as well for the best two-year-olds, and that is an intriguing race. But let's start off with this sales race. Well, how many runners have we got here? 20 runners, two-year-olds, varying degrees of ability, a real mixed bag. Where do we start here?
Yeah, absolutely. The 155, it's the DBS Premier Yearling Stakes, 6 furlong. And as you mentioned, plenty of good-looking horses in the field. Probably Cool Company would be the main standout. Just pipped in the Phoenix Stakes at the Curra by Dick Whittingham. I think half a length was the winning distance there. Yeah, and he's probably the obvious one that stands out. There's plenty of good horses to take him on with, isn't there?
Yeah, we've got a whole field full of promising two-year-olds. Now, there are various stages of development. And trying to pick out which one's going to peak at the right time is obviously difficult. We have got two form standouts here at the weights. We've got Cool Company, as you mentioned, and we've also got Fast Act, two horses who are well established at the group level. So effectively, this is a dipping class for that pair, but they've got plenty of weight, they've got plenty of opposition, and there are doubts about both of them. Firstly, Cool Company. The doubt about him is just the busy, busy, hectic campaign that he's had. This is going to be his 8th race of the season, and he's been through the mill right through the season as well. It only comes 11 days on from that hard race he had when second, albeit in a Group 1 in Ireland, had a hard race there on softish ground. There's two question marks with him. Can he maintain the levels of form given the season that he's had? So active, so busy. And the second point is he has got a question mark against him in a field of this size. When you think of his best work when he's done that, it's been in small fields, a bit, you might call them soft races that he's been winning, dominating by and large. And the ones he got in a big field, in the Coventry Stakes at Royal Ascot, he got absolutely lost. So that's the problem with him, Cool Company, a different scenario, one in which he's failed to fire before. And then we've got Fast Act. Now, obviously, really good form. Second in the Morecambe brings as good a form as anything to the table here. But there's two question marks about him. Was that Morecambe run quite all it seemed? It was a messy, muddling race. Beacon might have beaten them all had he got a clear run. Kotai Glory and Fast Act were first and second more or less throughout in the funnel of speed that is Goodwood. And Fast Act did hang more or less throughout there, didn't really apply himself fully. And then there's the added question mark of 6 furlongs because Fast Act looks an out-and-out speedball and therefore trying to stretch out to 6 furlongs may take away exactly what he's good at. So there's question marks there, Sam, against both Cool Company and Fast Act, who I'm presuming will be the favourites in a big field.
Yeah, we expect those two to be installed as favourites. Just those two going head-to-head, does £7, I think, that Fast Act's receiving there, does that put him ahead of Cool Company for you? Or do you think Cool Company will be able to lug around the nine stone four?
Yeah, on time form ratings, Sam, because of the weight allowance that Fast Act's getting off Cool Company, he is actually top rated in the whole race, £4 clear of Cool Company, who's second top. There's a bit of a class divide then after those, but as I've said, if you believe like I do, the both of those, Cool Company and Fast Act, have got a point to prove whether they can replicate their ratings under these circumstances, then it opens the way up for something else. And there's a couple in here who we must look at and must look at closely, get the jeweller's eyepiece out on. Firstly, number 17, Valley of Fire. One race, one win, came over this course and distance at York in a maiden. Overcame an experience that day. He was very green and still managed to win. It was a really promising start. And then the added bonus with Valley of Fire is that he represents exactly the same owner and trainer that took this last year with Hike Bidiak. So Valley of Fire has got lots going for him. The one question mark against him is just the maturity factor, because look at the race he's in now. He's in a 20-runner field full of really professional, really hardened by this stage two-year-olds, and therefore will Valley of Fire be experienced enough to cope in a very different field from what he had to deal with at York last month? And more interesting for me, and probably the way I'm leaning in terms of putting my money down, is Marquez. That's number 10 on the card. Now, Hamden Al-Maktoum has got several runners in here. Marquez is the choice of Paul Hannigan, which is pretty significant in itself. And then you look at Marquez's form. Every time he's come to the track, he's raised his game. And that's a good profile to be bringing to a race like this. And in terms of actual ratings, he's not that far behind Cool Company and Fast Act, getting weight off both. Last time out at Goodwood, he finished second in what appealed and what still looks now a really strong nursery. He was beaten half a length by a Son of Africa, and he might well have won that day, but for a sluggish start, another sluggish start. And that is something that needs to be ironed out, because if he's slowly away from the stalls this time, then he's going to be on the back foot and we're going to be well up against it. But at least I'd rather have a horse who's got a problem leaving the stalls than a problem in terms of talent. It's much easier to try and fix that than it is to try and get some talent or some fast ability from somewhere. And Marquez is drawn well, because when you look at where the marker principles are and the form horses, the all high, Cool Company 19, Fast Act 17, the very speedy Muckmals in 14. And that makes his draw, Marquez, in 20, ideal really. So he could have the ideal tour through the race. The stand side looks the place to be in terms of where the action is going to unfold. And I just like Marquez. His form as it stands, Sam, isn't far behind the theoretical principles in the race. And also, it's a really good recommendation that he's improved every time he comes to the track. And the final point about him, you often look at pedigrees, especially with these developing two-year-olds, just to get an indication of how high they might climb. And it is encouraging for Marquez that he's a full brother to Mecca's Angel. Mecca's Angel is a really smart sprinter and was a really smart sprinter last year at York, finished second only to Hot Streak in the Roses at this very meeting. So Marquez has got in his blood to run really well at York, and I like his profile. I'm thinking, Sam, that there are holes to be picked in the big two, both Cool Company and Fast Act, and the one to pounce to capitalise on their potential failings for me is Marquez.
Okay, then Marquez in the first one for Jamie. We'll move on then to the next race. This one, the 2:30, the Lowther Stakes, of course, Group 2 for the fillies. And we are betting like this. It's Tiggy Wiggy, the 13-8 favourite. Cursory Glance, 5-2. Anthem Alexander, 11-4. And it's 11's Bar. And of course, Tiggy Wiggy and Anthem Alexander have clashed many a times already this season. Most recently, the Queen Mary, won by Anthem Alexander. But Tiggy Wiggy never been out the top two in her career. And then, of course, we've got the unbeaten Cursory Glance at second favourite. It certainly looks pretty tight between the top three, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's very tight between them. And added to which, these are the cream of the crop. We've got the three highest rated juvenile fillies in Britain or Ireland turning off at the Lowther. So it's a sensational race in that regard. It's a real division decider. And I know that you didn't get an expert, in inverted commas, on from Time Form to say this, Sam, but I don't know what's going to happen here. Because we've got three horses, and there's a case to be made for each of them, and there's a scenario where each might thrive. So let's take the Queen Mary first, where Anthem Alexander beat Tiggy Wiggy by a neck. Now, Anthem Alexander that day, as on a previous start, just showed blistering speed and managed to hold off Tiggy Wiggy in the final surges. The question with Anthem Alexander is, will she stretch out to six furlongs? She tried six furlongs on her debut, was beaten in a maiden, which tells you something, albeit on soft ground and albeit probably green. But she just looks an out-and-out trailblazer who might prove best of five furlongs. And then we've got, on the other side of the coin, Cursory Glance, who was more or less flat out at Ascot at halfway and then really stormed through at the finish to put a seal on the Albany Stakes and win it by two lengths. And then we've got the conundrum of Tiggy Wiggy and the sensational performance that she put up in winning that super sprint at Newbury. Again, that was over five furlongs. All her racing has been done over five furlongs. So there's a slight question mark about whether she lost it out, and another slight question mark about just how good was that performance in the super sprint, because it might have made her look a bit better than she is, considering that she was largely up against slower and inferior horses that day, despite it being a big field. So there's a conundrum involved here. Will Tiggy Wiggy last out? Will Anthem Alexander last out? Is Tiggy Wiggy as good as she looked at Newbury in a super sprint? Will she reverse placings with Anthem Alexander? And will Cursory Glance be fast enough for a sharper six furlongs at York? All of those questions go into the mix. I don't think there's been you're able to be definitive about the answer to this particular puzzle. As far as I'm concerned, though, Sam, Cursory Glance is probably the one that I'm going to side with, just in the hope and expectation that Tiggy Wiggy and Anthem Alexander might get at each other sooner than ideal and therefore just reduce their prospects of staying six furlongs. Certainly Cursory Glance is going to be third best at halfway, probably third best a furlong out, but that crucial last furlong is going to play into Cursory Glance's hands. I'm just thinking that under these conditions, with the scenario that's most likely in my mind, that Cursory Glance might just be able to pip them.
OK, then, Jamie back in Cursory Glance to complete the hat-trick and remain unbeaten. Just before we move on, outside the top three in the betting, it's big, big prices about everybody else in the race, and we'll get the three places for each way. Could you be taking any of those at a big price?
I don't know. It looks between the... I mean, there is a scenario, as we talked about. The one that might help Cursory Glance win is the one that might see Tiggy Wiggy and or both of Anthem Alexander failing in the finish and actually finishing tired. So there is a case for saying that something might be able to sneak into a frame at big price. Maybe Sulalat, number 9 on the card, is the unexposed one in here. A well-bred horse. Brian means she's done everything right so far. Promising debut and then stepped up on that appreciably when winning a maiden by four lengths. Her group race entries say plenty. She's also in the Rockfell and Cheveley Park, the Group 1 Cheveley Park later on. So Sulalat is a potential player for a place, but I think it is playing for places at best, because one of the big three will win. Trying to pick which one, I promise you, is a very hard task, because it's not only about trying to work out which one's best, but it's also trying to work out which one is going to be more suited by the run of the race, which we still don't really know. But it's just a token selection here, really, Sam, hoping to go fast, because the faster they go, the better Cursory Glance's chance. And if she finishes off as well here as she did at Royal Ascot in the Albany Stakes, then she might be the most power-packed finish at the end of a really intriguing Lowther Stakes.
Okay, then, yeah, as you said, a very, very tough job to call it. And rather you than me for that one. Cursory Glance available at 5-2 with us here at William Hill at the time of recording. We'll move on then to the next race on the card from York on Thursday. This is the 305, a 1 mile handicap class 2, 20 runner field. Only two of this field are unproven over a mile. What are your thoughts on this race? Plenty to go at again, isn't there?
Yeah, there's plenty to go at. And one thing about this race is, Sam, that we know plenty about each of the participants. They're all established handicappers. They've all done plenty of racing. They've all probably done their improving. So it's a matter of trying to work out which one's the best handicapped on the day. And there is a standout here for time form and for me personally, for a horse who's got previous at this track, previous at this meeting, this number 4, Short Squeeze. Now, Short Squeeze at this time last year was absolutely taking off, and he looked a group winner in the making. He won at this meeting. It was a middle leg of a hat-trick. He went on to win at Haydock by 4.5 lengths. He won at York at this meeting by 3.5 lengths. He was really in the zone back then. And this year, he was late coming back, not until Royal Ascot, when he was in the Royal Hunt Cup, and he's been a bit slower to come to hand. But back at York last time, there was definite signs that he is coming good again. He finished fourth behind Alejandro, probably over an inadequate 7 furlongs, but he did travel that day as if he was on the way back. And there's a there's a case for thinking that this might well have been the plan all along. He hit heights at the meeting last year. It might have been a target all season long this time. And here he is with Pat Smullen booked and with the cheek pieces and tongue strap both employed to try and get a bit extra out of him, or just trying to get him back to the level he showed last year. And if they work, any one of the tongue strap, the cheek pieces or Pat Smullen's urgings, then we've got a well-handicapped horse here, because he was namely dropped £2 for that latest fourth at York, which definitely signalled a revival. So he is the one horse out of all the field who I am confident in saying is a well-handicapped horse. It's just a question of whether he can step up his revival. Stall 18 is a problem. It is. We can't put a good spin on an assassination, and stall 18 over the mile in a big field like this is an assassination, but he is at least a hold up horse. He'll be dropped out the back. You've got to hope for the best, but I do like him in here, Sam. He's the best handicapped horse as far as I'm concerned, and also as far as time form's concerned, because we've got him top rated out of all 20.
Okay, then, short squeeze, the top rated horse for the guys down at time form. If you're looking for outsiders in this one, Jamie, always plenty to pick in a 20 runner field.
Yeah, absolutely right. What have we got? In terms of pace, we've got Boom and Bust and Balducci. But Boom and Bust, he's well drawn to attack, but he just has looked half the horse this year. Three runs, not really suggesting anything big's around the corner, but he's got a claimer on board for the first time, which might help a bit. Balducci's had to dip down to lesser company in order to win, but obviously they're going to get prominent rides, which can be an advantage at York. The two horses I'm most interested in at a bigger price, firstly, is an old dog. I use the word dog in the kind of sense, if that can be possible. Santa Fizio, number 9. He's a very hard horse to win with. He's a very hard horse to predict. But what he needs is to be buried in a big field and produce late. And that's the scenario that's on the cards here. And it's the first time in over a year that he's dipped down from the hundreds mark in terms of handicapping. So he's got half a chance from his mark. This is the right scenario for him with a big field. He's got the high cruising speed to cope and, in fact, to excel in races like this. And there have been spots this season where he's looked to retain all of his ability, particularly when he was sixth in a similar standard race at Royal Ascot. He was in the Buckingham Palace there and ran well to finish sixth. So Santa Fizio is one who's a lively outsider. And the other one brings something slightly different to the table in that he's only a 3-year-old, and that's number 13, Parbold, a horse who he's been to York twice. He won his maiden here on his debut, then he finished third in the Gimcrack. That was last year. This year hasn't really taken off as we expected, and probably as Richard Fahey has expected, but he's got something different here in that he's in the handicap environment, and you might just find that the big field, strong pace, that sort of scenario stimulates him. And the other crucial thing with Parbold is that he has been a bit tricky in the past. He hasn't always looked to be giving his all, but there's a difference in him from this time compared to when we've seen him previously, and that is that he's lost something. He's been gelded since we've seen him last, and that can sometimes focus the mind. So Parbold's interesting as a 3-year-old, effectively taking a drop in class in a scenario which might well motivate him and stimulate him with Paul Hannigan booked. Santa Fizio's one who I can't let go at a big price because he's going to pop up in one of these races one day. But as far as a win bet's concerned, and probably the most confident about any race at York on day 2, I'm siding with number 4, Short Squeeze.
Okay, then, Short Squeeze in that one for Jamie in the 305. Strong fancy for that one. We'll move on then to the highlight of Thursday's action. That is the Yorkshire Oaks Fillies Group 1, of course, over a mile and a half. And as you mentioned right at the top of the podcast, Jamie, it's not going to be the greatest of betting heats. De Gruyter 1-4, and it's 10-1 the field. We've just got the 7 runners, so only 2 places for each way. Is there any reason at all to not be with De Gruyter here?
No, 4-1 on seems a good price to me, Sam, because she's just in a league apart from these. She won a much better race than this in the King George. She showed the older boys a thing or two when winning that, maintaining her unbeaten record here. And this is probably an easier race than she's faced the last twice, because the Oaks at Epsom was probably more of a test than she's got here, and she came through that with flying colours, as she's come through every race with flying colours. Look, she's a sensational filly, not just of the current age, but of any era. That's how good De Gruyter is. And the reason why it's going to be good to see her is that, obviously, when you get a horse of this calibre, it's always a pleasure and a treat just to watch them in action. And don't forget that this might be her last race in Britain as well, because the likely destination after this is the Arc de Triomphe in France, where she'll try and win Europe's premier race. And you never know whether they might draw stumps on her after that. They might well race her as a four-year-old, but more likely than not, she's going to be retired with that huge reputation already cemented. So Tegruda is something special. In terms of a forecast bet or a betting without Tegruda market, Venus de Milo makes some sense here, because Venus de Milo, there's a sense of deja vu here. In the Yorkshire Oaks last year, she finished second, ran the race of her life, but was up against a John Gosden hot pod that she had no chance with. It was the fugue that day. It's Tegruda this time. But the signs from this year is that she retains all of that ability. She's found a mile and a quarter too short, really, in Group 1 Company the last twice, the Pretty Polly and the Nassau Stakes, just lacking a bit of extra gear in the finish there. But she's got first-time equipment on. She's got a hood enlisted. And going back up to a mile and a half is the key point with her. She's still got a sense of unfinished business at this trip, and I'm expecting her to improve a bit on what she's done so far this year. But they are playing for second place at best here. Tegruda, Venus de Milo forecast is probably going to be my bet in the race. But you know what, Sam? It's just going to be a pleasure to watch Tegruda. Sometimes racing goes beyond betting. I know it's difficult to say that on William Hill Radio, but still, racing as a sport, something to treasure, something to witness, drama unfolding, and Tegruda is a real headline act, not just of this year, but of almost any year.
Yeah, it'll be fantastic to sit back and watch that exceptional filly once more. And as you say, the interest there might be in a betting without or a forecast market. We'll move on then to the 4:20, the last race that we'll come to on today's podcast. This is the Gautier Stakes, obviously. Filly's listed race, this one. And William Haggis has won the race last year with Our Obsession. And he runs two this year, Arabian Comet and Queen of Ice. Arabian Comet looks a decent prospect, Jamie.
Yeah, because she was second, wasn't she, to Miss United in the Lily Langtry Stakes last time. And that, in isolation, is a really good piece of form. And it's just the latest in a series of improved performances from Arabian Comet. She's a three-year-old who's really thriving this year in that sort of style that William Haggis does especially well with, because there are a few other trainers better than William Haggis at not only setting a three-year-old on the right path, but keeping it improving throughout the season. And she comes in here in the form of her life, which obviously counts for plenty. There is just a suspicion of mine that she might have been a touch flattered at Goodwood, because she was out of the heat of the race for a long way. And Miss United was going hard from the front. Several others tried to challenge Miss United and run their race by the time the Arabian Comet arrived on the scene. And that was also a mile and three quarters, coming back to a mile and a half today. Regarding the other one, William Haggis's Queen of Ice, she's not quite as progressive as Arabian Comet, and also she's not quite the stay as the Arabian Comet is. She's tried a mile and a half last time out, but she was beaten 14 and a half lengths into fourth that day and didn't really seem to stay out that trip. And the horse she was beaten by 14 and a half lengths behind that day was Noble Protector, who was in here under a penalty, carries 9 stone 11. Now, it's almost come out of the blue this season, Noble Protector, but it doesn't necessarily mean that all is not to be believed. But she absolutely ran away with that listed race at Newmarket last time. Since then, she's been bought by Qatar Racing, now runs in the maroon and gold of Qatar Racing. How many Stuart Kitto horses and running those colours? Not many. It's a shame, really, in a way, for Shelley Burkett, who struck up a really good partnership with this horse. But because of the new owners, Jamie Spencer is being enlisted. But that Newmarket race again, it sort of fell apart around her. Now, it's strange to say that about a 14-runner race, but the case was that plenty just failed to fire for one reason or the other that day, and they were really stretched out. She won by five. It was a further 9 lengths back from criteria to the rest of the field. And there's just that little niggle in the back of your mind that race and that performance might not be quite all it seems. And the horse we've talked about so far are all established horses, but this might be a race where the less exposed horses make that jump up to listed company. And there's two down the bottom, 2 3-year-olds, who really fit the bill here. Let's talk firstly about Stella Bellissima. She ran in that Goodwood Lily Langtry race, which featured Miss United, in which Arabian Comet was second. Now, that was only the second start of her life, and she was still very green, and the Goodwood track didn't seem to suit her at all, because she was all at sea in the straight. She finished only sixth after a pretty brief challenge, but still, the case was that the reason that she was set that assignment, and the, more to the point, the reason she was only 4-1 for that assignment, that still stands. It's clear that John Gosden thinks a lot of her, and going on this bigger track at York is likely to show her to much better effect. She's by See the Stars, as is the other one, the more interesting one for me, Starlet, number 9. It's an Irish raider representing Dermot Weld. I've got a good Dermot Weld stat for you. Are you ready for this, Sam?
Yeah, I'm ready. Go on, hit me.
The last three runners Dermot Weld has sent to York's Ebor meeting has resulted in 2 wins and a 2nd. Those two winners were Olympiad and, more significantly, Pale Mimosa, who won the Galtra Stakes in 2012. It's clear that Dermot Weld knows what it takes to get a York winner, and it's significant that he's bringing Starlet here after just 2 runs. Now, it's no average maiden runs either that she's been running in. On her debut at Navan, she was behind a stablemate, Carla Bianca, who's gone on to run to a big figure in winning a listed race since then. And Starlet herself was very impressive when she made short work of a 7-runner field by 5 lengths last time out at Leopardstown. Now, she's got a really good pedigree. It's clear that the really positive foundations have been laid there. And the most significant point of all is that Dermot Weld start. He's bringing this filly over when he's got plenty of other potential horses to fill this gap here, and he's the one, she's the one that he selected to come here. So Starlet, yes, she's got a bit to find on form, but I don't think there's a more promising filly in the lineup than her.
Okay, then, fair enough. Plenty of selections there then from Jamie. If you could just remind us one more time, please, of all your best picks for Thursday's racing from York.
Yes. In the opener, the Yearling Stakes at 155, the selection is number 10, Marquez. Because of the doubts about Cool Company and the arduous campaign he's had, and the doubt about Fast Act, and the fact that he's going to have to stretch out to 6 furlongs, I think that Marquez makes sense to me in that race. The Lowther Stakes, I am going to precursor this with what I said during the main preview. I really haven't got a clue what's going to happen between the big three here, but cursory glance is the percentage call in the Lowther Stakes. 305, the one I'm strongest on, number 4, Short Squeeze, who won at the Ebor meeting last year and looks to be coming to the boil at exactly the right time again. 340, we talked about the procession that we're going to watch with Tegruda. It's going to be essentially a lap of honour, but it's going to be a lap that we should all savour. And then, in the 420, the Galtra Stakes, pesky Dermot Weld bringing this Starlet over. She, to me, looks the right fit for the Galtra Stakes.
Fantastic, then. There we are, the thoughts of Timeform's Jamie Lynch on Thursday's racing. And why not join us on William Hill's Racing Radio from 1:45 to hear it all live with Gareth Topham, Sam Turner and Darren Owen in the studio to bring you all the action from the second day of the Ebor Festival alongside Bath, Fosslass, Newton Abbott, Wolverhampton and the Irish meeting from Killarney. Thanks very much for joining me today on the podcast, Jamie, and we'll catch up again tomorrow and hopefully we'll have some racing to reflect on as well.
Yeah, we've got plenty to talk about tomorrow on the next podcast, and I'm going to issue a plea here, Sam, before we leave. Will someone ask Darren Owen about the Haydock coffee story at some point in the broadcast in the afternoon? Because it involves me, it involves him, and it's an absolute belter.
I'll make sure it's in the show for you, Jamie.
Thanks, Sam.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.